Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go. So this program is live. It's almost it's live, this program, for the 15th day of March 2017. We're almost at the level of what's that process whereby they froze Walt Disney's head? Yeah, and maintain life at extreme. Well, not really, but not in case of, in the case of Walt Disney, but nearly hypothermically live. How's that? Yeah. It's about 2 minutes past the hour. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that out of the way early this evening. And this is the horn for, as noted, the Ides of March, the 15th day of March, 2017. On this day, let's see, said 2017 plus 57 plus 2061 years ago today, the world changed forever? Yes, forever. Because this is, of course, the anniversary of the murder of Gaius Julius Caesar. And it was as much a cause of consternation and curiosity back then, what really went into it all and who all was really involved, as the murder of JFK is to us. So yeah, I think I got my ciphering right. 2061 years ago today. The Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March. And Caesar, according to Shakespeare, who was relying on ancient sources, says to the old man, well, the Ides of March are here. And the old man says, none too cryptically, but not yet gone. Mm-hmm. This is a listener-supported program. I'd like to extend thanks first and foremost to our subscribers who made it possible for us to only have a $200 fundraising goal this evening, because that's all we got is $200 to raise. We finished with like $245 last night, and our subscribers did in fact make up the difference. So all we've got to do is raise $200, and we're even for the evening. Then $200 tomorrow, and $200 the day after tomorrow, and we're done. So we've got $600 remaining for this week, but $200 for this evening. Okay. If you would like to help out, then all you have to do is go to headonradionetwork.com and click on the tab Contribute. And there you will see the entry screen for PayPal. If you would like, we welcome and need, we've only got a couple of subscribers, to I think maybe three, on this particular date of the month. If you would like, feel free to please jump in as a $10 a month subscriber. $10 a month works out. You wind up paying, not paying for, but contributing. You wind up contributing something on the order of 15 cents per program to help keep this all on the air. And you will be part of a number that will eventually, we hope, be 400 people at $10 a piece. And that would be, well, that's a beautiful day is what that will be. So if you want to become a subscriber, just check that little box that says make this a recurring monthly donation. And you'll be part of the happy not quite hundred. The not quite part being the modifier that you see what I mean. At any rate, whatever number you put in the little box, it's just a matter of getting to the next screen and finishing up that way. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, and some people do, thanks, Frank, in Iowa. Thank you, Frank, in Iowa. Then the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318. If you put some number in, other number in there, it's liable to wind up in the Klan's PMB. PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And that's how we will, in fact, keep all of this on the air. It's a lovely, well, no, it's not. It's a damn freezing day, and it has been all day, and it will be again tonight, and it was last night. And I got to admit, I'm not at the top of my game because sleeping in, you know, 30 some odd degrees is difficult to do. But and you know, when the wind is howling like it was howling last night, and just pummeling the eaves, 80-year-old houses don't stay very warm. So I'm a little right. But regardless, the day itself has been clear. We didn't get much to speak of in the way of snow, but up east, by God, I think they did. And I think most of the stuff passes and we get a little bit of a break, if you can call it that, in fairly short order. I mean, it'll be great for us because we're burning propane for all we're worth right now. It got down to about 13 degrees overnight. We'll get down to 20 tonight, and that's there's something about that 20 degree break off. That's not going to be as bad. And then 23, 41, 32, 27. Omaha! No. But it becomes much more tolerable as we move along. We're expecting maybe some snow on Sunday. Not much to speak of. Damn sneezing. You didn't want to hear that anyway. But it's real brisk here in the studio this evening. And, you know, quite frankly, your support of the Horn helps us to keep the studio. And Agnes produces Dr. Bill, so she gets the heat going back here. And she's got it warmed all the way up back here in the studio to 54 degrees. And I was so annoyed last night by the crinkling and crunkling of my heavy winter coat with the Gore-Tex and the Thinsulate lining and everything. I've opted for an insulated hoodie this time through. And I hope that gets the job done. So, you know, because it's so cold here, we trotted on over to the Cathedral of Common Sense Fellowship Hall fairly early. And I want you to know, this being prayer meeting Wednesday and everything, I want you to know, it was worth the trip in the freezing cold. Pan-fried chicken, you know, the little old blue-haired ladies do it up in the right way in an iron skillet. You know, not deep fried. You just, I guess, you know, I guess they put maybe about an inch of oil in the bottom of the high-sided iron skillet, and they fry it on one side till it gets crispy brown, and then they turn it and they, oh, nothing like it, nothing like it. And they had whipped up some potatoes, and they made a whole bunch of pan drippings, chicken gravy. And of course there was some corn there, and some green beans, half runners out of the jar, canned from the garden. They worked up some fresh baked dinner rolls, and a little cottage cheese and fruit for me, because I can't go too crazy on the real food. And then of course it did dessert, big old tall apple pies and vanilla bean ice cream. That big old giant tureen full of hot coffee and sweet iced tea. Oh yes. Oh yes. It was most rewarding. But I have to say that we're going to change what is referred to as the order of worship this evening. And we can do that as an independent religious institution. We are not absolutely locked into any particular liturgy. Brethren and sistren, this evening we are going to simply acknowledge the greatness and the power and the majesty and the zany, wacky sense of humor of the goddess of irony. Mm-hmm. We're going to. Because the goddess of irony has outdone herself today. Oh, by the way, if you would like to join in with the congregation, the online congregation, all you have to do is go to headonradionetwork.com and click on chat room. Pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and there you will be met at this point in time by Anatole, Hoghead, Jugapunch, Laborman, and utility-designated chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. And you'll be part of, like I said, the part of the online congregation. Mm-hmm. I mention that because, of course, as noted, this is the Ides of March. And it's famous, as noted, because 2,061 years ago, a conspiracy of Roman senators murdered the dickens out of Julius Caesar. Not a lot of people think about the Ides of March anymore, I don't think. I mean, you've got to, at a bare minimum, you've got to have a passing familiarity with Shakespeare's Julius Caesar. And that line, "Beware the Ides of March." Other than that, the only way you get to it is via the classics, you know, ancient Roman literature and so forth, and the historians. Or else it means nothing to you. So that means that for a Philistine, like Comrade Kumquat, it was probably lost on him. He probably didn't give it a second thought. But that didn't mean the goddess of irony didn't. Oh no. Not by a long shot. Because the goddess of irony took Marcus Aurelius in hand and walked him right through her sanctuary. Irony. And it gets broader, and it gets more slapstick, and it gets funnier in the telling. And she used as her apostle in this particular instance none other than Snoop Dogg. Now, as you can find out by wandering around the interweb tubes, Snoop Dogg has re-released a video. It's a new video of a song, Lavender, which is a remix of the Bad Bad Not Good song that features someone called Kay Trinada. Sorry, my cultural my cultural literacy on this is a little bit challenged. Comedian Michael Rapaport stars in the video. He gets gunned down by he's an ordinary clown dad. This is a world populated by clowns in this video. And he takes a toy pistol away from his clown kid at the breakfast table and sticks it in his briefcase. And as he's driving to work, he's blazing away on a big old, what we used to call back in the nerdy days, doobie, which may or may not be a blunt now. When he gets pulled over by a clown-faced cop who sees the toy pistol and then blows him away. This, of course, seems a rather obvious reference to, say, oh, I don't know, Tamir Rice. And because the Goddess of Irony was working overtime today, this was also the same day on which the 911 dispatcher, who was derelict of duty, finally was dealt with in regard to the Tamir Rice case. Mm-hmm. And the story was published today. And Constance Hollinger, in a letter dated March 10th, was found by Cleveland Police Chief Calvin Williams to have violated protocol of the day that Tamir Rice was murdered for having in his hands a toy gun. Constance Hollinger, among other things, was accused of failing to tell the dispatcher who sent the officers to the rec center that the person calling in the event said it could be a kid and the gun might be fake. Constance Hollinger didn't bother to relay this information. And therefore, officers Timothy Lohman and Frank Garmback showed up, took less than 2 seconds, having pulled up in their cruiser, took less than 2 seconds before they blew Tamir Rice away. And the pitiful 8-day suspension of Constance Hollinger infuriated Tamir Rice's mama, as it should have. Samaria Rice said the suspension was unacceptable. 8 days for gross negligence resulting in the death of a 12-year-old boy How pathetic is that? If that's the best the system can offer, then the system is broken. That from her lawyer, Subochandra. Of course, the head of the Cleveland Cop Union said the officers didn't do anything wrong when they blew Tamir Rice away within 2 seconds of barely setting eyes on him. And so it is in the Snoop Dogg video that clown dad Michael Rappaport gets blown away by the clown-faced cop for having a toy gun. And the song continues, and the video continues, and eventually you see another clown character referred to in press accounts as Ronald Crump, done up in a suit with the stupid duck's ass hairdo and orange and clown faced, and Snoop Dogg takes another toy gun, points it at the, I guess we'll call him the Trump clown, and pulls the trigger, at which point a stick comes out of the pistol and unfurls a flag that says, bang. A few seconds later, we see that the Trump clown is perfectly happy and, well, perfectly healthy, uninjured, except for the fact that he's wrapped up in chains. Okay, so that's all fairly self-evident, right? Well, kind of. Enter Donald J. Trump, president of the new 90 states of Merca, thanks to the votes of millions of people who were either Klansmen, neo-Nazis, or economically insecure, economically anxious. Right? Yeah. And I guess Jared and Ivanka weren't around because he found his phone. Yeah, I mean, this is... Well, what can you say? It's Trump. Trumple thin skin, earning the name every day. It was 11 hours ago when he tweeted, "Can you imagine what the outcry would be if at Snoop Dogg, failing career and all, had aimed and fired the gun at President Obama? Jail time." Well, see, Donnie dumbass, he didn't aim and fire a gun. Because it wasn't a gun, it was a toy. Just like the one that Tamir Rice was holding that got him murdered by the Cleveland police, and about which you have never said a goddamn thing. You freak. You sick, pasty-faced, doughy freak. But there was beauty in that, insofar as by sending out that tweet, The Tangerine Tiberius admitted he's a clown. And did that all on the Ides of March. I never knew Snoop Dogg to be an aficionado of the classics, but he's a right serious smart fella. And I wouldn't be surprised if he knew exactly what he was doing. And of course, he's totally clueless because, among other things, we could also tweet, "Can you imagine what the outcry would be if a fading rock and roller threatened the lives with real guns of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama?" Hashtag Ted Nugent, the Nuge. Because that actually happened. Or how about, "Can you imagine what the outcry would be if I, on the campaign trail, had called for Second Amendment people to do something about Hillary? Hashtag those clowns have real guns." And the angry Indian points out, "Really? I've got photos of MAGAs lynching and burning effigies of Mr. Obama because they wanted to take America back from the Black Canyon Muslim." Angry pointing out, "Hell yeah, Easy D." You know, that's his hip-hop name, Easy D. Easy D just helped Snoop sell more albums. Trust. You sent me over. He got a click out of me. I went over and checked out the video. You can too. And so all of this is of a piece. And this being Prayer Meeting Wednesday, I don't know if we've ever had a Prayer Meeting Wednesday fall on the Ides of March before. I still have a long-term plan of taking that walk on March the 15th some morning in Rome. I checked the weather there. The high today in Rome was about, I think, 68 degrees Fahrenheit. Get up early in the morning. Get admission to the forum. And although it's all in ruins, we still have a pretty good idea of where things were, so we know where the Domus Publica was, otherwise known as the Project. That's right, Gaius Julius Caesar lived in the Project. Domus Publica means public house. It was literally public housing for the Pontifex Maximus, which Caesar was. And he gets up and he walks along the Via Sacra and walks on out of the forum. He had dismissed his lictors, his bodyguards, for that day. And walks over to the Campus Martius. I'd say, what, maybe mile and a half walk? Marcus Antonius is walking with him. I think Lepidus was there too. And they get detained by some conspirators outside the little temple that was attached to the Theater of Pompey, which had been built some years before, Pompey now being dead, having his head relieved from his shoulders, disattached, if you will, by Egyptian headloppers, the head having been presented to Caesar as a gift in a box, infuriating Caesar. Mm-hmm. But he was getting ready to set off on the Parthian campaign to punish the Parthians for having, in turn, punished his financial benefactor, Marcus Licinius Crassus, for having set out to make war against the Parthians in an attempt to steal all their money. And so it had to happen that day or not at all, or else Caesar would be gone off to war again. And when Caesar went off to war, he tended to stay gone for 5-6 years. That's how wars worked in the ancient world. And so he walked into the little temple of Venus Victrix, or Venus Victrix, as the case may be, where he was first accosted by some petitioner about bringing his brother out of exile, and somebody stabbed at him with a knife, and he hollered, "What? This is violence!" And then the rest of the conspirators moved in on him and chopped him to chutney. In the world's first autopsy, a physician declared that he could have survived every one of the wounds he sustained except the last one. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the concern trolls, one of whom was Kurt Eichenwald, said that Trump was totally in the right and that you should never make fun of assassination, which is, I guess, generally true in principle, but Snoop Dogg didn't do that. It was a toy gun, and it had a bang flag in it. And what's more, Trump was then shown, the Trump clown, as it were, it wasn't Trump, was the Ronald Klump, was then shown completely alive, having simply been subjected to arrest. Mm-hmm. If you are in the Nash Vegas area and you are a fascist, you can toddle on down to the Nuremberg, Tennessee rally as the Clementine Caligula seeks to drum up support among the faithful to put pressure on Tennessee's two senators, Corker and Lamar the Plaid Avenger Alexander, to support Donald Trump's plan to kill something like 17,000 Americans next year in cold blood. Because, see, that's where the problem arises, really. Donald Trump has a hissy fit about a music video, and you know, as pointed out by the angry Indian, Snoop Dogg is now laughing all the way to the bank. Ah, thank you. There's that word I was looking for at the beginning of the program. Cryogenics. Yeah, it feels downright cryogenic in here. But at least this hoodie has pockets in the front. But they're going to... Trump can have a hissy about a piece of parody, a piece of art. Hey, how about more Latin? Ars gratia artis, art for the sake of art. Gee, I wonder if Mr. Snoop Dogg will get a visit from the Secret Service over this. Or maybe he'll just get a visit from some Trump supporters. You know, the Klan. Mm-hmm. But there it is, because we talked about this. Donald Trump has openly stated that it is his goal, his desire, because he said he wants this TRICARE bill, thank you, Joy Behar, passed. It is therefore his openly stated goal and desire to kill dead some 17,000 American citizens in the first year in which that nightmare bill is in effect. But Snoop Dogg's the problem. Have you got that? Because I've been working on getting that all day long. That a parody video is more upsetting than a plan to murder 17,000 American citizens in 1 year alone. I keep saying it and saying it and saying it and saying it. And we have no right of self-defense against those murderous thugs whatsoever. They get to just try to kill you, and you don't get to try to defend yourself against them with anything except your puny little vote, which you don't get to exercise until 2018, by which time those 17,000 people will likely be too dead to vote. It's really kind of hard to stomach. Oh, and by the way, this is in tandem, just to go so far as to point out how deeply the term, how thoroughly the term Trumple thin skin, thank you, Carol Baker, applies. Back in 2013, The Onion, you know, The Onion, published a satirical article, because it's a satirical newspaper. You can still read the article. It was dated January 23rd, 2013. It purports to be an op-ed written by Donald Trump. The headline reads, "When you're feeling low, just remember I'll be dead in about 15 or 20 years. My friends, everybody has their down days, and during these long winter months, it is especially easy to succumb to the doldrums and find yourself in a bit of a funk. But not to fear. I have a simple tip that's guaranteed to pick you up and get you back in good spirits in no time, and here it is. Whenever you're feeling low, just remember that I, Donald Trump, will be dead in roughly 15 to 20 years. That's right, in the not very distant future, I will die and then be gone from the world for all eternity. You may even get to watch me in a casket on national television, being lowered into the ground, never to be seen again. I bet you're smiling just thinking about that. Now, I recognize that the news out there in the world has been particularly depressing lately, and these days it's understandable that one might begin to feel like there's no hope and no reason to go on, but let me assure you that there is. Oh boy, is there ever. Indeed, you can always take solace in the fact that the monstrous, unimaginable piece of shit that is me will stop existing fairly soon, and that I will continue to not exist for the remainder of your lifetime. Biologically speaking, I, the host of NBC's The Apprentice and Celebrity Apprentice, have no more than 2 decades left to live. In fact, right now, I'm just 10 years away from reaching the average lifespan of an American male. How does that make you feel? Pretty good, right? Sure, I'll have a grand, opulent funeral that'll be talked about and broadcast extensively, and all the news segment retrospectives on my life will probably be obnoxious to watch and listen to and will very likely make you angry. But just think, all of those segments will end with a picture of my blustery, self-important face and the dates 1946 to 2031 printed beneath it, or maybe 1946 to 2032, or who knows, maybe earlier. Even if you're not feeling glum, I guarantee the recognition that my death is a concrete and rapidly approaching inevitability will make you feel even better. And if my death in 15 or 20 years feels like it's far too far in the future to wash away your blues, you can take heart knowing that I'll start to physically and mentally deteriorate well before then. Why, by 2020, I, a man who recently tried to extort the sitting president of the United States to release his college and passport records, might even begin to show signs of serious and unavoidable decline in mental and physical faculties. And doesn't that just perk your spirits right up? Imagine me shuffling along, hunched forward, with a noticeably shortened gait and perpetually haggard face. Heck, that might happen by the end of this decade. Of course, there's an outside chance I could make it another 25 years, but in a way, wouldn't it be even more uplifting and enjoyable for everyone if I wasted away slowly and pitifully until I became a wizened and impossibly frail old relic and the pathetically impotent papery husk of a once powerful man? Hey, I got an idea. Let's try a surefire pick-me-up that's certain to buoy your spirits right this very moment. Let's think of ways I could die. Perhaps I'll suffer through a slow, excruciating kidney failure that leaves me in profound pain that the doctors just can't treat. It could be a massive heart attack while I'm delivering a speech to investors, forcing me to clutch my chest in agony and stagger into the audience. It could be Alzheimer's, or I could even be diagnosed with a vicious form of cancer that at first appears to be responding well to chemotherapy, but then takes a rapid and inescapable turn for the worse. And of course, there's always the possibility that I'll be declared brain dead after a stroke and lie immobile on a hospital bed for a year or more before Melania finally works up the courage to pull the plug. And if you need a real shot in the arm to get you laughing and smiling again, just remember that I could trip down a flight of stairs in my own ultra-plush luxury high-rise this very night and shatter my skull right there. Isn't that great? So there's no reason to be wearing a frown, my friend. I will die, and I will die soon, and as long as you remember that, your days will be brighter. I promise. Again, that was from 2013, and the people at The Onion were not anticipating him ever becoming president of the United States. But that doesn't change the reality of a lot of that. I mean, among other things, he's already surpassed by 6 years going on seven the expected lifespan of, say, a male born in McDowell County, West Virginia. He's rapidly approaching the expected lifespan, average lifespan, of a man in this country, period. That is why I say that, barring natural forces, he's going to be president until 2020. Because he ain't going to be impeached, and nobody's going to trigger the 25th Amendment. But here's the fun part. Here's the rub. So I told you, that was published in 2013, right? Well, the New Yorker apparently got hold of the story because they got hold of a letter. In the March 20th, 2017 issue of the New Yorker, a headline, The Onion Struggles to Lampoon Trump. It reads as follows. In January 2013, Donald Trump's special counsel, Michael Cohen, sent a letter to The Onion, the satirical online newspaper whose Latin motto is Tu stultus es, you are dumb, you are stupid, had just published a piece under Trump's byline titled, "When You're Feeling Low, Just Remember I'll Be Dead in About 15 or 20 Years." Michael Cohen, the attorney, threatened legal action.
"Let me begin," Cohen wrote, "by stating the obvious, that the commentary was not written by Mr. Trump. Secondly, the article is an absolutely disgusting piece that lacks any place in journalism, even in your onion. I am hereby demanding that you immediately remove this disgraceful piece from your website and issue an apology to Mr. Trump."
The Onion, of course, did no such thing. Cole Bolton, editor-in-chief at The Onion, said, "We never apologized. The article's still up." Now, don't go too hard on Michael Cohen, okay? Because being chief counsel to Donald Trump can be some of the easiest lawyering any lawyer could ever do. Because you're lawyering for Trump. It's a scene right out of Rain Man. "Hey, Cohen, how much does a deed cost?"
"About $1 million.
"Oh, okay. Hey, Cohen, how much does it cost to tell the Onion to take down an article?"
"About $1 million.
"Okay. So tell him to take that article down that I didn't write. I don't like thinking about being dead and everything. I'm not going to like being dead at all. I'm going to hate it. One morning when I wake up all dead." What do you want to bet? What do you want to bet that Donald Trump is so shallow that he can't even stand to think of his own mortality? What do you want to bet he's so shallow that if he does, he thinks about how much God is going to love me because I made so much money down here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Michael Cohen laughs all the way to the bank.
"Check cleared."
We got to find somebody else to write another letter to. Right. Speaking of Trump, the folks at The Onion said, and particularly Cole Bolton said, "We've always thought of him as a horrendous buffoon, an objectionable person." And then as they watched the election unfold, he said, "I felt a comedic dread." I'm sorry, that's Chad Nackers, the head writer at The Onion. He said he really enjoyed the Obama administration, quote, "because Biden was a fucking blast." They had scenarios set up for Hillary wins and for Trump wins. Ben Berkley said there were some really great Hillary wins headlines. In a giant font, "Desperate woman settles for asshole nation without much money. Now, sisters, destroy those tools of our oppression," shrieks victorious Hillary Clinton while brandishing fistful of severed penises. And then beneath the headshot of a smug Trump, "Trump immediately concedes election after discovering object of desire is 240 years old. Mm-hmm. So if you ever wondered how shallow, how truly stupid the occupant, that orange man in our White House, truly is, consider that he instructed a lawyer to threaten to sue The Onion in a case that would have been laughed out of court. Literally, because it's The Onion, and The Onion's funny. I mean, can you even begin to imagine the courtroom scene? And I didn't write that. Are you sure, sir? I never did. I can't write. Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The goddess of irony. I will tonight. Really. I will be sacrificing both a case of rubber chickens and a crate of whoopee cushions to the goddess of irony. Because this was just way too good. I mean, honest to God. And on the Ides of March, no less. You don't just get that every day. Meanwhile, elsewhere in the Republican Party, I had this story in the stack for this evening because I'm sure this man is a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual. Let's turn our attention to Moore, Oklahoma, where, because the goddess of irony is a good goddess, there is an investigation underway into State Senator Ralph Shorty. Mm-hmm. Ralph Shorty, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, because he has to be in order to be a Republican in Oklahoma, Stan. Well, the investigation is taking place because some family members called in a child welfare case worried about a teenage boy. This is all reported in the Oklahoman. One of the boy's relatives called in from Cleveland, Oklahoma, called in the report. According to Cleveland County District Attorney Greg Mashburn, that a Moore police investigator has given him an initial briefing. Good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Oklahoma Senator Ralph Shorty was questioned as to why, Ralph Shorty, why were you alone in a motel room with a teenage boy?
209er, this is Denver Flight Control. You're approaching some rough weather. Please climb to 42,000 feet.
Roger, Denver.
We have a visitor.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Captain Over, Mr. Murdoch, and Mr. Basta. This is Joey Hammond.
Well, hi, Joey.
Come on up here. You can see better.
Joey, we have something here for our special visitors. Would you like to have it?
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Sure. You ever been in a cockpit before?
No, sir. I've never been up in a plane before.
Have you ever seen a grown man naked?
Do you want me to check the weather, Clarence?
No, why don't you take care of it?
Kind of Kind of saw that coming. I hope you saw that coming. Well, who knows? Who knows? Joey, do you like gladiator movies? Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Shorty. Shorty. R, Oklahoma City. Was first elected in 2010. He's been married to his high school sweetheart since 2002, whose personal motto is it in yet? He studied in college to do mission work in Uganda. He instead went into the oil and gas industry and then into politics because, well, you know, there's a lot of overlap between Ugandan missionary work and oil and gas industry and politics because both involve a lot of fucking. Responding to an inquiry by the Oklahoman, Lieutenant Kyle Dudley of the Moore, Oklahoma Police Department said, on March the 9th, officers of the Moore Police Department were contacted in reference to a welfare check at a local hotel. Welfare check? I thought we'd gotten rid of those. Responding officers found a juvenile male in a hotel room, which was also occupied by an adult male. The circumstances surrounding this incident are currently under investigation. No additional information can be released at this time. Shorty rented a room at the Super 8 in Moore. And if Michael in Madison is out there, he knows now what the bumper is going to be. Checking out March 9th, the front desk manager said, it says two adults registered. Aha, uh-huh. Of course it does. Of course it does. It kind of has to, doesn't it? He's got a history, Ralph Shorty. Does. He pissed off voters lately when he wanted to undo some drug laws that were approved by voters. And he advised a former state representative by the name of Dan Kirby, R. Tulsa, during a sexual harassment scandal. Kirby went on to resign after a special House investigative committee recommended his expulsion. Stand and fight, Ralph Shorty said. Larry points out they really should change the name of the state to Less Oklahoma, because no matter where you live in the nation, we could all use a hell of a lot less Oklahoma Stan in our lives. Trying to get in on the act, and I wait a minute, I'm giving out a cowbell for this one. Larry said, Ralph Shorty also honeymooned at the beautiful downtown Izzet Inn in Izzet, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. So that was just that's just the start. Oh, I do love Michael and Madison. I do love the way your mind works. Michael says I was already reaching for my phone to email you. Yay! Oh, and we got more because it's prayer meeting with Moore, Oklahoma. Ah! We got more because it's prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn, don't you know? Yeah. Goodness me. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa for getting us started this evening. We now have only $160 to go in fundraising for this evening. Thank you, Asa. Thank you indeed. I guess I should probably shut up about the weather and being cold, even though I can't feel either my hands or my feet. Heather points out my city in Michigan got a foot of snow. It got up to all of 30 degrees. Jeremy, meanwhile, says over the last 24 hours, Burlington, Vermont, and a large part of Vermont went from brown dead and some green to 29.6 inches of the white stuff, third largest blizzard ever on record here. Keep in mind it was 70 degrees 2 weeks ago. No climate change here or warming. That's proof of global cooling. By the way, I live on a hell of a snowball for, I have one hell of a snowball for Daryl Issa. And Tom Coburn, I presume. And Greg Pruitt, he's in the mix. He's in the mix, too. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, he is. So hopefully we'll take a bigger bite out of the fundraising hole now that Brother Deacon Asa has gotten us started. And, yes, we'll take a break. I'll try to gather my wits. Your calls are welcome to 304-658. Sometimes I forget the damn number. Okay, 304-663-4676. Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet. Bob Kincaid Horn and 304-574. Really, Bob? I told you, it's cold. I've been better. Oh, well, shucks, Larry. Happy to help. He says, I love you, Bob. I've been real depressed lately. You made my year, brother. Thank you. Well, thank you, Larry. Thank you. 304-574-8178. That's the number. Definitely that's the number. About $1 million. All right, break time. Light them up if you want. If not, oh, I got more filibobstering to do. You know, either way's fine by me. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Your own tail and talk about the bad old days. Tremor in a t-shirt telling me your heart hurt. Honey, let me count the ways. Then a big boy busted in screaming about his girlfriend, waving around a fungo bat. Bass player stepping up, a bandage and a coffee cup, took it in the baby bath. Don't wanna die
been feeling pretty bad for the maid. Lost a couple drinks and my dinner in the sink, and I woke up with the bed still made. And it was a quiet morning, I wasn't quite breathing, my heart way up in my throat. Girls start screaming and the maid starts screaming, and it looks like it's all she wrote. Well, they slap me back to life and they telephone my wife and they fill me full of Pedialyte. My guts and my glory would have made a great story if I ever could remember it right. Don't wanna die in a Super 8 motel just because somebody's evening didn't go so well. If I ever get back to Bristol, I'm better off sleeping in a county jail.
Nothing like a straight-up, good old-fashioned rock and roll. Just a rocker for the top of the hour, filibobster bumper. That, of course, Jason Isbell and Super 8. Because, well, a long-distance dedication going out to upstanding, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, Senator Ralph Shorty of Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Yep. I told you there was more. I bet I know somebody who might be at tonight's Let's Kill Lots of Americans Trump rally in Tennessee. I'll bet that somebody might be State Senator Joey Hensley of Tennistan. Mm-hmm. It was back in 2012 when State Senator Joey Hensley of Tennistan declared that he was a family values Republican. And he's another one of these goddamn Republicans who somehow or another sneaks into a medical school, gets an MD, and then squirrels away enough money to be able to run for elected office. But even so, I gotta say, had to be Slim Pickens on the ballot. I don't mean Slim Pickens, the actor. Yeah, I mean, bottom of the barrel ballot. Let's put it that way. Family values Republican. And of course, as a family values Republican, he ain't gonna put up with none of that foolishness. Not like your gay marriage. And women's marrying women's, and men's marrying men's, and thinking they's married in the eyes of God. Probably gets real worked up just thinking about who's going to which potties. Because down there in Hohenwald, Tennessee, I know where Hohenwald, Tennessee is too, by God. There's just not a lot of other excitement, because there ain't but about 3,700 people in Hohenwald, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I reckon things can get kind of boring. At least they got boring for uh, for one woman, Lori Barber is her name. Lori Barber got bored with the big city life in Hohenwald. And she walked out on her husband. Now remember, Lori Barber also has good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical family values. And she walked out on her husband to start a smollicking around on who, of course, absolutely, state senator, family values Republican, Joey Hensley. And yes, state senator Joey Hensley despises gay people. Back in 2012, he sponsored the Don't Say Gay bill, which would have forbidden teachers from talking about the fact that the world has gay people in it. Yep. And more than that, darn it. By the way, mentioning the Nuremberg rally in apparently Nash Vegas tonight. Charlie emails to tell us the narcissist Trump has shut the city down. But anyway, back to good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical state senator Joey Hensley. This year, having gotten nowhere with his Don't Say Gay bill, he decided to try a different tack. And so, get this. This is real. He sponsored a new bill. I'm sweetening up a hot cup of decaf Earl Grey, in case you're wondering what the noises are. I figured having the hot cup of tea that I could at least wrap my hands around would be beneficial. Hopefully they're not so damn numb that I'm going to throw hot tea all over myself. Cross your fingers. Get this. He sponsored a bill this year in the session, HB 1406, and if HB 1406 somehow becomes law, any baby born in which a member of a couple was not contributing either egg or sperm, you know, a same-sex spouse, would have to file for second parent adoption in order to have the legal rights of a parent. In other words, the bill, HB 1406, would declare that any baby born to a same-sex couple was illegitimate. Bastardy. Most states have statutes that formally eliminate the legal concept of bastardy.
this guy in Tennessee wants to bring it back. Which leads one to worry not so much about the hypothetical bastards out in the general population, but the very real live ones in the Tennessee state legislature. But I've gotten away from my brief. So we know that State Senator Joey Hensley believes that marriage is a union of one man and one woman, at least at a time. Because Lori Barber done run off from her husband and took to romping with State Senator Joey Hensley. She's also a nurse, and she's also an employee of State Senator Joey Hensley. On top of being, probably shouldn't say on top of, in addition to being a nurse, an employee of the good Christian state senator, she's also his patient. And documents uncovered by the Nashville Scene newspaper indicate that he has written her no small amount of prescriptions for, of course, come on, you know it, I don't even have to say it, it's 2017, pain pills. And one more thing. Lori Barber, who has done runoff with State Senator Joey Hensley, is, and thank God, West Virginia's getting some relief. Well, they're cousins. Mm-hmm. They're cousins. Cousin Daddy! Cousin Mama says supper's about on the table. Come on in. No, cousins. I love doing stories like this when it's not about when it's not about West Virginia. God, you have no idea how much I enjoy doing stories like this when it's not about West Virginia. Here you go, State Senator Joey, just for you. Cousin Daddy, Cousin Mama, why I got a baby's arm growing out of my head? Cousin Daddy, Cousin Mama, how come my ears is like this? Jesus God. Well, there's your family values update for Wednesday, the Ides of March, 2015. Yeah. Hoo-wee! I tell you what, if you want you some values, there ain't no values like good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, re-pig-licking family values. You know, as long as the homos can't get married. Because, you know, they're weird. Cousin Daddy! Hey, let's run over and check in with the angry Indian. What do you say, angry?
Hey, my man. It's a very, very, very strange hump day.
Don't say hump again, when we're talking about cousins. And don't say it, but yeah, I understand.
Well, I sent you a link about academia.
I saw that.
Did you take a
look? Oh, yes. Tell people.
You know, I was only one mind, and that's a long fucking list of scary, scary, scary fucking people. And, you know, the MAGAs, as far as they're concerned, these are the upstanding folks. I mean, many of them were in the military.
This is a February story. This is a February story. Professors and staff arrested for trading in child rape. Comes out of the University of North Dakota. And the University of the University of Virginia. And Allegheny College. There's a whole network.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Kirk Nesset, a professor at Allegheny College, was busted with over 500,000 videos and images, including a folder that was simply named Kids Fuck. Wow.
When I saw it, I almost, because there's a Twitter account called White on White Crime, and when you go on that Twitter feed, you will see fucking story like this after story like this after story like this after story like this, but it's not Muslims, which is not to say that that bullshit isn't done in Muslim countries. It certainly goddamn is. We can talk about the Bek Abbasi, you and I have talked about it on this show. The dancing boys in Afghanistan, where I told you that found out about because of a documentary where this Marine lieutenant was saying that, you know, I have kids at home. And he's like, and I got to work with these motherfuckers. You know, it was off the cuff. He's like, I got to work with these bastards. And what happened was he finally got permission from his command to go in there and confront these fucking commanders in Afghanistan and say, look, you can't do this. You got to put a stop to this shit. And how this motherfucker was sitting there talking about, oh, I can't stop it. Everybody likes it. You know, who the fuck are you, an American, to come in here and tell us what the fuck to do? You know, you're a guest here, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, I'm powerless. I can't do a fucking thing. Because the Marines, if they had it their goddamn way, you understand? They would have put a stop to that shit. But
yeah, to their credit,
they've been told they can't do anything about it. To their credit, you know, we're being told we can't fucking do anything. And then, even though she can be a wild card in a lot of goddamn ways, Cynthia McKinney, this is on YouTube. You can find this on video because it was Senate congressional. Well, she was sitting there, had to be congressional. Had challenged motherfucking how can I forget these names? How can I forget the Bush administration this fast? Whoever the hell was running, you know, knowns and unknowns.
Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld.
Yeah, Rumsfeld, thank you. She had questioned him because DynCorp, they were paying for a lot of these parties. And she's like, hey, you know, how is it that American taxpayers are not aware that DynCorp is, you know, basically participating in the trafficking of young people by paying for these parties to entertain these fucking fighters that the U.S. is using over there and has to work with over there? And he said some crap about, well, they were in the penalty box because it is. And after good behavior, they were taken out of the penalty box. So this is why they were able to get contracts again. And she's like, but, you know, what are we supposed to tell our constituents about this? And he's like, well, hey, you know, we need to go back and look at it. And so it essentially, we don't give a fuck. You know, we don't care. So we know that this shit exists. But here it is in academia. Here it is in the fucking police forces. Which, like I said, white on white crime. If you go and you look for this on Twitter, daily they have these goddamn stories of conservatives, right? You don't hear anything about it. You got Jimmy Savile in England. You got Rolf Harris in England and Australia. You don't hear anything from these fuckers.
Pizzagate has been discredited how many goddamn times?
Oh yeah, but well, yeah, but see that the reason there's no tie to Hillary, and so therefore the Trumpanzees aren't interested.
They don't care. Yeah, you know, you got the Franklin scandal. That was a Republican scandal, and I'm surprised that they don't harp on that one. It was a black Republican who was at the head of that, Lawrence King, a black Republican. He was the number one black Republican in the country at that time. And all of them were paying fealty to this guy because this was their in to the black vote, and he got money for them. He earned money for them. He got caught up in this scandal doing exactly what you're talking about right now. And, hey, nobody wants to talk about it. You had a congressional paid scandal in the 70s. That was the same sort of thing. Republicans. Nothing. Told that, you know, you can't report it. There was even a documentary made by the BBC that was not allowed to be shown. Right? You can find it on YouTube if you look for it. But it wasn't allowed to be broadcast. The producers start out the thing by saying it wasn't allowed to be broadcast. But Pizzagate, there's no basement to that goddamn place. Somebody went in there with a machine gun or submachine gun, whatever the hell it is. I don't know anything about weapons. A field weapon. Let's just put it that way. That's where that shit belongs. But he goes in here and threatens the customers and the staff of this goddamn establishment. There is no such thing going on there. They're on and on about it. Mike Flynn was one of the people that propagated this. Am I wrong?
No, you are not. You are, in fact, correct.
Right? So he also didn't fess up about dealing with Russia, didn't fess up about being a foreign agent in terms of Turkey. And none of this is impeachable. You know, none of this would make the system say, we've had enough of the fucking clown show. That's it. South Korea is making us look stupid. They got rid of their goddamn jerk in a peaceful fucking way. Well, fairly peaceful anyway. I mean, you know, there were people harmed, right? This is embarrassing, Brother Bob.
Well, okay, you call it embarrassing. I call it not at all surprising.
No. That's what also was embarrassing, that we're not surprised by this, that we're so used to this now, that this has become so hyper-normal that we can't even really see anything out of it other than to chuckle and then say, okay, what's the next Democratic candidate that we can come up with that will be acceptable to big business so that we can move forward? Not that you and I are there, but that's where the discussion gets leveled off.
Well, yeah, you're right. But the, I mean, what you're talking about, Angry, is a search for a threshold. A search for some line, some imaginary line in the sand. At which point Republicans would look at Donald Trump and say, he's got to go. And I contend that as long as they are on an entirely different threshold, namely getting every one of their last sadistic wishes to come true, the previous threshold simply does not exist. Does that make sense to you? I mean, not sense, but I mean,
I mean, it doesn't make sense, but it makes sense in terms of this, obviously, how these people, that is their worldview. They're going to continue until it's broken, at least until it's broken for them. I mean, I saw something on RawStory.com about a Trump supporter who said, no, I don't like the fact that I'm going to have to pay more. I don't like the fact that I'm a business owner. He says he has 15 employees and that he's upset with all of this. But at the same time, he says, I get upset with my wife, too. So I'm just going to deal with it. As long as I have a white president, I'm okay. You know, I don't like the fact I'm going to have to put out more money. I don't like the fact that it's going to cost whatever the fuck to build this wall, because we know goddamn well that the fucking Mexicans are not going to pay for this shit. He's sticking me with that bill. Grandma's going to have to lose her fucking and hover around in her diabetes shit and her breathalyzer. But, you know, as long as the niggas are not in power, man, I mean, I'm just going to have
to deal with, then we're safe,
know?
Right?
Mm-hmm.
American freedom is safe.
You know, as long
Because that means that the white folks and the Klansmen and the neo-Nazis don't have to take the country back.
That's it.
And, you know, the first two evenings of the week, I spent an inordinate amount of time on Steve King of Iowa. And I never even got around to his latest outrageous statement. We kind of got all hung up on somebody else's babies. But he wasn't done.
Yeah.
Did you catch the latest?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The Steve King channels Charles Manson moment?
Mm-hmm.
The Helter Skelter moment?
Mm-hmm.
Because Charles Manson prophesied a coming race war between Hispanics and African Americans, and that is what he called Helter Skelter.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve King declared this week, days ago, that long before Hispanics and African Americans and other people not as white as Steve could outnumber white folks to become a minority-majority nation in this country, Steve King predicted there would be a race war between Hispanics and African Americans. And, of course, that will preserve the white majority status quo, because the Hispanics and the African Americans will just kill each other off. And the people in his district keep sending him back.
That's true, but he has a point. In a very twisted and fucked up way, he has a point. And I'll start off with this so that I make sense, because my experience, and I've been South, such and so on. I lived on both coasts, lived in the Midwest, you know, did the Montana, Idaho, Wyoming thing for quite a while. Did California for, you know, a bit, didn't like it. Didn't do Texas because I was told by everybody who had gone through there that I probably wouldn't leave if I went there.
At least not alive.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't be able to keep my mouth shut, which is the main reason, you know, I have been back to the South. Right. You know, okay, I'm going to say this now. The FBI, now you can look this up. The FBI actually broke up a plot. There was a major statewide plot involving, I can't remember which group this was. And it basically started in the prison system, which you have to understand was Charles Manson's life experience. Now, his mother was a prostitute. His father supposedly was he was a trick baby. His father was a soldier and wasn't around. He was raised in the hills of Appalachia by his rebel relatives, an uncle and grandfather in particular, that told him that the system was bad, the revenues were coming, they made and sold moonshine, right? He got sent up for like 20 years or whatever it was, for a $10 bad check. And the reason I'm pointing that out is that he was from the bottom, and I don't like to use the term white trash. You've never heard, you know, because I know what it means. But this is what the fuck.
Well, I mean, Charles Manson is, let's put it this way, Charleston, West Virginia's Charles Manson. So don't get too broke up about using that term.
Well, I get broke up about it because I know how it's used. Because this is what happened to him. Charles Manson was just like any other goddamn kid born in the world, right? His mother happened to be a prostitute. That was the circumstance. He was a poor fucking kid. And when he did this bullshit, he did it because he was fucking poor. It was a $10 fucking bad check. And that judge looked at him and said, "You're fucking not even worth my spit as a white boy. And I'm sending you to motherfucking prison
over this bullshit instead of maybe finding you a goddamn job, right? So what ended up happening is he was raised in the fucking prison system. Anybody who checks his fucking record knows that. He also was either lucky or unlucky enough to end up in the, you know, having to share a fucking jail cell with a motherfucking leg breaker for Al Capone. So his upbringing was the segregated, abusive, predator and prey prison system. So when people are looking at Manson, you know, coming out with Helter Skelter, and there's a big scandal, especially for people who are into the conspiracy stuff. What was the woman's name from California? I can't remember her name. She had a radio program. She was actually the first podcaster, probably, if you really want to get down to it. But she used to talk about her various conspiracy theories. And one of the things that she said about Charles Manson, that if you look at it, a lot of California violence didn't start until he got out there. And she's like, you know, some high-priced lawyer showed up, and he just, you know, got released from this 20-year sentence. And they gave him a motorcycle. He learned how to play guitar from this cat that I'm talking about that used to work for Capone, and ended up in California after picking up two girls who had four credit cards or something, and they bought a bus, and he just started picking up people on his way over there. So she came up with an idea that he was released to, you know, and he and other people were sent out to California basically to turn the flower children evil. Because he started bringing in bikers and shit to LSD parties where the flower children were. Before that, they didn't hang out. That's how the Grateful Dead ended up fucking meeting the Hell's Angels. Supposedly, they met him through... well, they met each other through motherfucking Charlie Manson. So, you know, when we talk about that bullshit, he's talking about what the fuck he saw in the prison system. White people are a minority within the fucking prison system, but they account for the majority of the motherfucking murders. Now, they're murdering people of color and also murdering other white prisoners. Yeah, and it's mostly over drugs. But the racial hierarchy in there is they're the minority, but they run the entire motherfucking thing. So where does the violence usually met out that you hear about every day? Stabbings and what have you, rapes and shit. It's either interracial or it's between, you know, black inmates and Latino inmates who are all split up into their various things. But this is what he was talking about. And that also works out into the street. Now, I know people don't want to motherfucking hear this, but this is the truth. And I'm sorry to be so long-winded, but this is something that I experienced because I look like, right, whatever the fuck a Latino is supposed to be, depending on where the fuck I'm at. Because, you know, people who are mixed in Latin culture, slavery existed too. So there's a hell of a lot of fucking people who look whatever, who have a Spanish, you know, cultural root. So when we talk about what the fuck is going on, I mentioned the FBI earlier. The FBI broke up a group in the 90s that was basically trying to eliminate the black population of California. And how they were going to do this, they were going to encourage street gangs to keep their corners, to keep their neighborhoods black free. There were three murders. One was a young girl on a skateboard who was beaten to death by some young Latinos. That was how initially the law enforcement find out about this. Then a black man was chased and beaten to death somewhere in LA. And then, you know, more and more information started coming out. And then the violence got worse because black, you know, groups, especially in the high schools, started retaliating against each other. So this just started in the prison system, worked its way out into the street. But the La Raza movement, there is a section of it. Now, I'm not saying that the entire Chicano thing, which is, again, is another thing altogether politically, somewhat outdated, but it's still there. You know, Chavez and what have you, you know, part of the La Raza movement believes in the idea of taking California literally back for Mexicans, for Northern Mexicanos. Southern Mexicanos are not even part of this argument. A lot of Northern Mexicans have the idea that Texas, Arizona, New Mexico. Yeah, Aztlan, right? So their thing is, their beef is with white people automatically because they're the colonial invader. But in their rhetoric, black people have to go too because we're not Indian.
We're not from here. Our homeland is in Africa, so you got to go. And their thing is that they're willing to do violence. Now, like I said, that's a small group. But in day-to-day bullshit, and I'm saying this because I was married to an American for more than 4.5 years, and part of the reason we broke up was because of this shit. They didn't understand how much Spanish I understood, and they were sitting there calling me a maete and all this kind of bullshit, and I'm just nodding, right? My partner was, why are you just sitting there not defending me with this shit? And it's the same thing when you're married to a white person. They don't really mean it, and my uncle's just old, and, you know, it's the same sort of bullshit. Because when you look at
it's the Mexico, same sort of thing we say about cranky old white grandpas railing at Thanksgiving dinner. Well, you know, he's old, he can't change his ways. Right? I mean,
yeah.
You're young, you're normal. You didn't vote for Trump. You go to Thanksgiving dinner. You take a date with you, and you know there's old Uncle MAGA down at the end of the table. Well, by God, Trump's going to throw out all them illegals and make America great again. And you're sitting there in slack jawed horror, and it's he's old. Okay, I mean I remember this is just silly. No particular bearing, but as my grandmother got into her dotage, I remember how she would it was a hill she was willing to die on. She was hotly opposed to the metric system, and she would tell anybody who cared to listen that the metric system would change how we told time and how we and change the calendar too. And you know, there's no arguing with it. You weren't going to change your mind because her mind was going. But you can't say that about every one of these racists and Klansmen and neo-Nazi sympathizers among the Trump voters. Some of them do know. And some of them, well, you can't argue with them either. You're not going to change their minds. But they don't have the benefit of being in the midst of the slide into dementia. See what I'm getting at?
Well, a bit, you know, but I'm saying that Steve King is right, but he's right in for the wrong fucking reasons. You know, I mean, he's right in the sense that, you know, modern immigrant from Mexico, and I'm saying Mexico specifically because that's the specific argument right now. They're not thinking about people from Nicaragua and Chile per se. You know, I mean, Mexicans don't even think about these people because they're lower on the pecking order in Latin America. But that is what I'm talking about when it comes to the pecking order. You have many Latinos in this country who see themselves as Hispanic, not Latino. They see themselves as white. They see themselves as cultured and as benefiting of white privilege or deserving of white privilege. And they stomp on blacks too. They stomp on, you know, Southeast Asians as well. They don't think that Native Americans have a right to complain about shit. They need to shut the fuck up and let the goddamn pipeline go through so that people can get fucking jobs. And they don't want any more Mexicans coming over. Trump should build that motherfucking wall. So there is a factor with that that's true. But that's not where Steve King is coming from. See, he's aware of what I'm talking about. Because if you actually listen to their goddamn radio shows on IceCast, you know, I mean, it's sickening, but I do. And you read their fucking literature, they know this. So what are they going to do? And this is where I ask the revolutionaries to fucking open their fucking ears and their minds. If they know that there's already going to be a fucking pecking order between us in terms of domination and in terms of the usual fucking, you know, tribal bullshit, they're going to politically play on these divisions. That is what Steve King is fucking talking about. So we should at least give him a little credit for fucking candor in this case. For saying that white people are going to allow fucking blacks and Latinos, and we're going to
that's the central piece. That's the central piece. So you know, under Steve King's logic, the white folks just sit back and say, "Let them slaughter each other," because it's good for white folks.
And it's going to, and it's already happening. It's already happening. You got people. I mean, like I said, in one of those cases that the FBI had talked about, because the Southern Poverty Law Center had listed a lot of these cases where a Latino woman, she was with her black husband, and these guys decided that, you know, she should have been with a lot, you know, with a Mexican, and they beat this man to death in a restaurant in L.A. So, you know, these things do happen, you know, but they don't get listed. They don't get mentioned, you know, all the time. But if you go on the street, you actually talk to people, these things are already happening because you have a lot of people who are saying, well, it's our time now. We're the largest minority now. Eventually, we're going to get enough candidates. Eventually, enough of us will become police officers, and eventually we'll be able to fucking take over. There is an attitude like that. But it's a minority, but there is an attitude like that. And of course, the only people who deal with that is the Mexican community to say, look, we need to fucking stop this kind of shit before this becomes a problem. Black supremacy is a problem. White supremacy is a problem. Mexican supremacy is a fucking problem. And see, and what it is, somebody like Steve King or Donald Trump will point to that minority and say, okay, well, this speaks for everybody. They'll look at Louis Farrakhan and say, well, he speaks for the entire fucking black community, even though Farrakhan ain't saying shit. Even though Farrakhan has got his nose up white ass with Scientology more than any fucking buddy else in the black goddamn community with that bullshit right there. You know, the founder of Scientology went to fucking South Africa. The founder of Scientology was an apartheid supporter. The founder of Scientology didn't believe that black people were human beings, yet Scientology has been adopted by the Nation of Islam because the leader of the Nation of Islam is hanging out with Alex Jones. So, you know, we have a whole lot of fucking insanity going on here.
Man, you can't just say the head of the Nation of Islam's hanging out with Alex Jones. And I mean, I had to mute the mic there.
Don't believe me.
I had to mute the mic for a minute and just go, God damn. I don't know why I bothered. I just didn't want to interrupt you, but really?
Yeah, but see, but that's where we are, Brother Bob. Trump, and well, see, Bush first, really, in a lot of senses. Now, we can say what we want to say about Reagan. I can get down to the visit at Bitburg, where he said that the SS men gave up their lives, too, for a noble cause. And how...
Yeah, they were patriotic, too.
That was allowed to slide. They were patriotic, too. You know, that was allowed to slide, right? So, you know, here comes Bush, who tells the European press, well, hey, I was a D student, and look, I became president... Right?
Yeah.
So I told my wife, I've told Miss Angridin, after he said that, the entire fucking country here in terms of standards, in terms of giving a fuck, slipped. Nobody shaves anymore. The fucking trousers hang off the asses and shit. Nobody gives a fuck any goddamn more. The idea is I can be a failure, but I can still fucking succeed if I fake it until I fucking make it. We got people not just in government right now, but this is an example. This is a result of managers falsifying their fucking CVs, right? You know, saying that they have experience that they goddamn don't. You have fuckers like Wayne Simmons show up on Fox News while, you know, Trump is talking about fake news. Fox News had a fucker saying that he was a CIA officer, not an asset, not somebody who was in the fucking background, a fucking officer who gets a pension and went on saying this shit for years. He's sitting in a federal fucking corrections facility right now for violating a federal law and fucking lying about that. So here is Wayne Simmons sitting in the fucking joint for lying. Martha Stewart went to the fucking joint with all her goddamn money, went to the fucking joint for lying to the FBI. Here's Trump lying about wiretapping. Here's Trump lying about motherfucking what?
Crickets. Pick anything. And right, and crickets. He's insulated. He's protected against criminal prosecution.
Yeah, but he's only protected because the public is like, we really don't want to do this, do we? Do we really want to do this? Or do we really want to do this? Do we really want to show the world how fucking stupid we are? And as a black Indian, I'm really being ridiculous here by saying we. But for sake of argument, we. You know, it's like, what the fuck? You know, How does this shit get to the point where it is embarrassing to say this man is my fucking president? Got to be more fucking careful. This man is my president. Shit. You know?
Well, you know, well, you always complain about the system anyway.
I said, well, goddamn right. Look at my people and look at the fucking system. But at the same time, I got to look at this and think about Native soldiers and shit and black soldiers in fucking uniform and fucking with this. Come on, man.
Oh, and speaking of, indirectly.
You know, so.
You know, the somebody else's baby's comment was born specifically and directly of a comment in support of Geert Wilders that Steve King made.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. He's a funny look.
Well, Geert Wilders is going. Geert Wilders is going down in defeat this evening.
Mm-hmm. And good riddance to him and his hoe, his brown sugar, Hirsi Ali, too, because that's the chick that she's black. I forgot what country she's from, but she immigrated to the Netherlands some time back, and she's been on an anti-Muslim tear. Now, if you want to talk about the hypocrisy of Islam in terms of women, I think that should be goddamn done. I think all religion is bullshit, but if you're going to do that, then fucking do that. But she sides with bigots like Geert Wilders, like Kola Booth, another motherfucking nutcase. You know, talks about chewing men's penises off and what have you, right? You know, black men anyway, right? So, yeah, she's out there. But anyway, Geert Wilders is the reason that the Netherlands, which has always had a very small neo-Nazi, you know, thing that has gone on, Amsterdam itself, if I remember correctly, was the Jewish quarter that expanded over time, right? There's always been a love and hate affair with the Jew in the Netherlands. You know, they were invaded by the Nazis. They kind of went along with it a little bit. Then they kind of didn't, you know. He played on all of that. And he defended himself by saying, here's this black woman who's agreeing with me. So it was not hate. And this is
you can always find somebody. I mean, consider the success in the United States of Alan West or Alan Keyes or Sleepy Ben Carson Sheriff David Clarkey.
You mean Alan Keyes, who was dragged off, what was that, Atlanta, Georgia? What year was that? When he was dragged away, when he tried to attend the Republican debate because he was registered in that state, and they dragged him screaming into the police car talking about the Constitution and his rights, and then he dropped his ass off in one of the worst fucking ghettos in Atlanta, Georgia, and he had to walk back to his fucking hotel room. That Alan Keyes who stopped talking to his daughter when she came out as gay? Yeah. That fucking Tucker Carlson. I don't want to hear shit about Tucker Carlson. He admitted that he got two of his fucking frat boys and went to a bathroom on his fucking campus and beat the shit out of somebody who he thinks approached him, who he thinks, you know, was trying to hit on. Fuck these punks. That's why I'm asking, why are we afraid of these people, Brother Bob? It's church Wednesday. Why are we afraid of these people? Under the eyes of God. Brother,
Why are we afraid of them, angry? We're afraid of them. You can win a one-punch fight with these bastards as long as they don't have their guns handy.
Yeah. Right.
But see, that's kind of like what I said about Trump having a shit hemorrhage over a goofy video with Snoop Dogg. The fact of the matter is, when Trump suggested that quote-unquote Second Amendment people, quote-unquote, do something about her. Well, he was talking about clowns with real guns, okay? Mm-hmm. A lot of real guns who, but for their cowardice, probably would have done something. I mean, I've got a story that's been in a stack for a while. It's a month old or so. Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Another guy was taken down by the FBI who was planning a Dylan Roof-style attack. And they got to him first. This shit's real.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, face-to-face, no, they don't want confrontation. But by God, if they've got the drop on you or they know you're unarmed, they got no problem with murder and mayhem and massacre. You think Dylann Roof ever would have drawn down on two or three other people he knew were carrying? I mean, and this is not argue for carrying weapons. It's an argument. It's a statement about the essential cowardice of Klansmen, of neo-Nazis, of skinheads, and of their millions of enablers all across the United States.
Well, Steve King is certainly a fucking enabler. But
Of course he is. That's why David Duke erupted in an all caps celebration of what he said.
Oh, yeah. And of course, you know, King nor anyone in his office has yet to say, oh, well, you know, we don't want anything to do with this motherfucker. And Trump hasn't either. There was a statement from Spicer about, well, the president doesn't agree with what he said, but that's about as far as he went. He didn't go on like he did about Snoop Dogg. I mean, my wife was like, you're not going to believe this. You're not going to fucking believe this. And I'm like, what? She goes, this is the first goddamn thing I'm seeing this morning before, you know, she walked out the door. She's like, look at this. And I'm like, you wait a minute, really? So he just helped Snoop sell every ticket to every goddamn venue that he's going to appear at for the next fucking 4 years.
Which
every
is fine album, by me. I hope Snoop's out there tearing Donald Trump a new one every time he opens his mouth.
Oh, he will, because he and his publicist sat around and said, you know what? This is the way for us to keep you relevant. You're getting up there in age, man. You can't just keep talking all that gangster shit. So, you know, you're doing your Martha Stewart thing over here. You tried your little show over here. Hey, man, go after Trump like this. You know the motherfucker's reactionary. He's going to jump on you as soon as he finishes the National Security goddamn council meeting. Matter of fact, he might even fucking text while the goddamn meeting is going on, like he did about Ivanka and motherfucking Nordstrom.
Okay, tell me this. Do you think Snoop is sharp enough to know he was doing this on the Ides of March?
Yes, and I tell you why. Because I don't like rap. I don't. I was out there when that shit was building up. I don't give a fuck what anybody says. That shit is a hell of a lot fucking older than you all want to know. But what I'm trying to say is, when you look at Snoop Dogg, he's an example. If you get a fucking black kid from the street and put them in a fucking position where they can make legitimate money, they're going to break every fucking buddy. And Snoop Dogg is one of the smarter goddamn fucking people out there. He is getting older, but he keeps himself relevant. Like I said, that fucking thing with Martha Stewart, I haven't seen it, but you know, my wife is into him, and she's, you know, can't wait till it comes on internet TV or whatever the fuck, so she can check it out. He keeps himself relevant. And at this particular fucking time in history, in the history of this goddamn country, with his background, to do a fucking music video that has something about Trump that will get him upset, that will get him to the point where he will pick up that goddamn phone and get on fucking Twitter and say something stupid, he knew that I was going to sell whatever motherfucking cut that was that he was trying to push. Because I haven't seen the video yet. And I'm saying that they knew full goddamn well what the fuck they would do.
Hey, when we got when we got that report on the meds that Trump takes, wasn't one of them a blood pressure pill?
Mm-hmm. I believe so. His hippie doctor, who wrote that thing in like 10 minutes, said something about a statin and a few other things. Yeah, maybe. But Easy D is easy, so it shouldn't really matter, you know. He's taken pictures of Snoop before, so I don't know why he's tripping. You know. I mean, do you think his blood pressure's up because of this? I mean, it must be. He started tweeting this, I believe, at 7 in the morning?
it was crazy. I think what it is he tries to get his tweeting done before somebody comes and takes his phone away from him.
It's pretty obvious that his body person, his minders, have no control over him. You know, it's either that or they don't know their jobs. One of the two. You know, he makes an embarrassment of himself all the time. And now he has falsely accused the Obama administration of wiretapping him because they're all walking back now. Right. The House Intelligence Committee's like, there's nothing.
There's nothing, you know, there's nothing. And now a lot of his defenders are backing up because they can't back this up. So when do the impeachment hearings begin? I mean, they went after Nixon for less.
Well, shit, they went after Bill Clinton for less and
they
succeeded.
Went after Bill Clinton, yeah. Well, half-ass. I mean, they succeeded in like stopping everything, you know, from moving. And what is he doing now, Ken Starr? I forgot. He was in the news recently.
He was running the show at Baylor University when the whole rape problem emerged.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got bumped from that, and as of March last week, he announced that he was leaving his post as a law professor at Baylor. So I guess
he had to leave.
I guess he's unemployed, poor fella.
Oh well.
In a joint statement, Baylor announced Judge Ken Starr will be leaving his faculty status and tenure at Baylor University's law school. Resignation effective immediately.
What would Charles Dickens say about this?
Well, you know, they paid him by the letter, so a lot.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, at least 1,500 pages worth. But going back to the Geert Wilders thing, I mean, I'm clutching at straws here. I'm in that, you know, find anything to hang on to for, you know, keep hope alive. And are the Netherlands are people in the Netherlands just more well grounded and saner than other people, or might this be a turning point against these fascists?
Well, a lot of people in the EU, for what I'm hearing, and again, I'm in contact with Europeans, but I haven't really seen anybody very recently. But what I have understood is that people were looking at what was happening in the Netherlands with this particular election because Geert Wilders has made a point of going up and down the subcontinent, going to England, going to Canada if they'll let him in, coming to the United States, hanging with Trump to build his own brand, but basically make connections. Anders Breivik was connected to Geert Wilders. No one talks about this. Anders Breivik has been to the United States twice. He's been to the UK. I mean, Interpol knew who he was. They also knew that he was searching for bomb materials on Google, and they didn't do anything about it. So in terms of Geert Wilders, the assumption was that he's accepted by a lot of what – I really hate to say it like this because I don't want to be misunderstood. But in Scandinavia, you have a very alt-left that's kind of a mixture of what you would consider maybe what the alt-right might be theoretically and what the alt-right is supposedly theoretically, that these are young hipsters that essentially – they're really more like anarchists as far as I'm concerned. They take a little bit of this, they take a little bit of that and put it together. Matter of fact, the one of these groups in Norway, I mean, sorry, not in Norway, in Sweden, is connected to what's going on with Julian Assange, because the woman who waited like however long to finally go to a local police station and make her complaint, it turns out that she has a connection to a female police officer that has a connection to one of these groups that is pro homosexual, but they're anti straight male. It's a very weird combo, but they're fascist. I mean, it's a really weird mix of what's going on up there. And that's what gave Wilders his alt-right credentials. This idea that he could get young gay men who are saying, I'm not against anybody, but I want to keep, you know, my Dutch heritage, and I want to be able to hear Dutch when I walk down the street, and I don't believe that the Muslims would accept my homosexuality. So he's been like this, like the idea that he can be a healer and he can bring these disparate elements together, and you know they can all move to Valhalla together as one on an international platform. You know.
Well, I find this all interesting because in the midst of the entire Dutch election process, you had these this outbreak of Turkish hacking, which I'm sure there's a contingent of the so-called left here in the U.S. Yeah, what left? No, it wasn't really. No, the Recep Erdogan is just a cuddly, snuggly, yada, 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 yada. Same thing they say about Putin. But in fact, pro-Turkish hackers hacked Amnesty International's website today. They hacked the BBC. They hacked a bunch of Dutch websites, all because they wouldn't, because they moved to quash, the Dutch did, moved to quash pro-Erdogan rallies among Turkish nationals living in the Netherlands. And he was seen as doing a good job of shutting that fascist shit down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And out of it all, also a little bit of an upset, the green left, who are actually real greens as opposed to the sparkle ponies here in the United States, the green left will have 16 seats in the Dutch parliament. When it gets seated, up from 4. And they weren't much interested in the immigration debate. They're interested in, you know, saving the ability of human beings to live on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm. So amongst other things.
But I mean, that's telling as well. But it'll be interesting to see if there's any coattails to this relative to Marine Le Pen and the presidential elections in France, or for that matter, AfD and their hope, Alternative für Deutschland, the new Nazis, they're hoping to get their very first federal parliament seats in fairly soon.
Yeah, well, see, yeah, that's one, like we were saying, I mean, that's one of the reasons why people were looking at it. But there's one thing, though, that I don't hear discussed, and I really haven't heard discussed since the late 90s, when I was very, very active. And I mean, when I was still on the street doing a lot of stuff. We were actually kind of shocked here in the States to find out that Muslim extremists, not all, but there were a significant number, were working in North Africa with neo-Nazis, that neo-Nazis are actually going to Arabs for paramilitary training in Africa. It was reported in the European press, which is how I found out. The French press was on it because Jacques Verguet, he's passed, I think, 2 or 3 years ago. Jacques Verguet was a half French, half Vietnamese international lawyer. He defended Carlos the Jackal, by the way, who was actually in court again for some charges relating to a terrorist bombing, I think it was in France, 1973, maybe 74. Jacques Verguet was the lawyer for several neo-Nazi organizations that were operating in France that were being charged with terrorism activities in the 90s. And it came out during the trial that they had gone to North African extreme Islamists before anybody was even using these terms. That these were hard right, you know, within the Arab world, they're seen as fascists, like ISIS. They were going out there for training. Now, I can't cite which particular groups because it's been a long time since I read that article. But when you talk about the Turkish hardliners that are backing Erdogan in the Netherlands, these guys actually work with the far-right neo-Nazis because they have a commonality of interests. Now, it's like when we were talking about Steve King earlier, and my mentioning Charles Manson's prison background. See, the white supremacists within the prison system actually work with some Mexican groups in terms of the drug trade. And they actually would do contract hits and what have you for each other. But they will get together, despite their racial differences, to go against black gangs, black inmates, you know, whatever the hell, and they both will work
for the crooked corrections officers or the system itself, depending on who you want to ask, in terms of disciplining and keeping black inmates in line to the point of stabbings and further. Now, this has come out in court cases over and over again. So you have to understand that sometimes, you know, the extreme Muslims don't like Jews. If Israel didn't exist, they would still have a problem with Jews. And we could even go back into why that is, because it has to do with Europeans, too. But the point is, they share a commonality of interest. So while they don't necessarily agree with each other, they will work together. And in World War II, the Bosnian Muslims and Croatians that were Muslim and not Catholic, they, again, had their religious differences, but they got together to kill Jews, Roma, Turks, Serbs, who was their main enemy. You know, that is part of the discussion that needs to come out, that there is a strain of radical Islam that works with a strain of radical white supremacy. I mean, even here in the 80s, anyone can go look this up. There were elements here of the Klan and the White Patriot Party that tried to work with Al-Qaeda to actually do acts of violence within the United States. That is why some of us who know this wonder where the fuck Timothy McVeigh's loyalties really did lie. Because there's a lot of questions about why the fuck he did what he did and how he was able to do what the fuck he did. So sorry about that. But, you know, there's a lot of questions here that need to be asked in terms of Europe, and especially when we look at on this Breivik and the American connection in terms of what happened in Norway. And the fact that the right here has been allowed to get away with this. They're not being connected to this at all, even though they're directly connected to it. And if we look at the Janet Napolitano Homeland Security report that got squashed, it pretty much laid out that the problem is white supremacy, the problem of Christian extremists like the Army of God, not the crapola that they've been pushing. So when we look at Erdogan and what he's been doing, he's making a bid to... You know, I mean, he already has a dictatorship, but he's really forming a Turkish fascist state that is built on a hard right, anti-Jewish, anti-minority, anti-indigenous, extremist form of Islam that they never really
pro-Russian.
Accepted.
Pro-Russian,
yeah. The fascists are working together. They don't have to necessarily agree with each other. Matajas in Greece and Franco in Spain did not necessarily agree with each other. But they were still fascists, and they still aided and abetted one another. I just mentioned Carlos the Jackal. He was supported by East Germany. He was supported by the Russian government for a time. He was supported by the Estonians, not because they liked him. It's because he was useful. The Palestinians, he was useful. Doesn't mean that they gave a fuck about him or that they agreed with each other. But they protected him because they were working together against the capitalist world. So people, you know, one of the things that the black community has a hard time understanding politically, and this is a problem, because it's really been beaten out of us, and most of our thinkers have been either assassinated or jailed. They've been neutralized. But populations, nations, what have you, have permanent interests, not permanent allies. They have permanent interests, not permanent allies. This is why the U.S. can work with the Kurds on Monday and then totally fuck them over Thursday afternoon and not think anything about it. The interests have changed. The allies then, hey, what the fuck? You know, I trade you like a chess piece, and there are pawns in every game. I mean, I'm not trying to be melodramatic, but it really is that deep. Is that serious? Is that serious? The U.S. has permanent interests, not permanent allies. If it really comes down to it, I mean, that whole talk about old Europe under the Bush administration was a threat. It was a threat to the order of things. The idea that the U.S. would turn its back and go without Europe on this, that we're just going to go without you. It's going to affect your fuel and everything, but no problem. We'll do what we did after World War II because we'll have the spoils. Then we'll just dole it out as we see fit. And evidently, we don't need Europe anymore if we can take the oil field. So we can control you through oil the same way we control them. I mean, the United States private corporations already own the water in England and in Scotland. They're trying to buy water in Germany, in France, in Belgium. Permanent interests, not permanent allies.
Yeah, well, permanently shifting. And speaking of shifting, let's change gears for just a minute, because March 15th has another significance, and it plays into something that's happening right now, Angry. March 15th is the birthday of Andrew Jackson, practitioner of genocide. And the reason, people need, I don't know if they know this, but officially speaking, Comrade Kumquat's visit to Nashville is a 2020 re-elect Trump campaign event. I wish I was kidding. I ain't.
Well, he filed the paperwork 5 hours after he won.
Right, and he sees himself, he sees Jackson as his hero, which, you know, tells you a little bit about his lack of understanding of history. He sees.
Well, he had a discussion about Frederick Douglass, so, you know.
Okay, let me break in here. Dumbass is speaking, and he's got a whole bunch of riled up white people behind him with their MAGA signs and their hats and whatever.
With American steel.
Oh, back to the American steel that's not going to be used to make
they
to build the pipeline.
They want to build them here. They use our steel. We believe in two simple rules: buy American and hire American.
Unless Ivanka's making some shitty shoes, in which case they're made in China.
On trade, I've kept my promise to the American people and withdrawn from the Trans-Pacific Partnership disaster.
That was already over before the election even happened.
Tennessee has lost one-third of its manufacturing jobs since the institution of NAFTA, one of the worst trade deals ever in history.
Oh, listen to the monkeys.
Our nation has lost over 60,000 factories since China joined the World Trade Organization.
China.
60,000. Think of that.
Yeah, China, where he's going to have Trump-branded massage parlors.
We're not going to let it happen anymore. Uh-huh. From now on, we are going to defend the American worker and our great American companies.
Unless we don't.
And if America does what it says, and if your president does what I've been telling you, there is nobody anywhere in the world that can even come close to us, folks. Not even close. If a company wants to leave America, fire their workers, and then ship their new products back into our country, there will be consequences.
You know, a trade war.
That's what we have borders for. And by the way, aren't our borders getting extremely strong?
No.
Very strong.
Very strong. No. Now the Nazis are chanting, build that wall, build that wall. Of course, now there's a piece of breaking news. His Muslim ban has just been struck down by a federal district judge in Hawaii.
Don't even think about it. We will build the wall. Don't even think about it.
Ooh, listen to the white people cheer.
In fact, as you probably read, we went out to bid. We had hundreds of bidders. Everybody wants to build our wall.
Hundreds.
Usually
of
that means we're going to get a good price. We're going to get a good price, believe me.
Yes. What was that? Some of those companies are Mexican, right?
Some of the fake news.
Yeah, 1 in 10. Yeah.
I don't think Donald Trump wants to build the
money.
Wall. Can you imagine if I said, we're not going to build the wall? Fake news. Fake news. Fake news, folks. A lot of fake.
little dude in the back with a crew cut going, fake news.
Now, the wall is way ahead of schedule in terms of where we are. It's under design, and you're going to see some very good things happening. But the border by itself right now is doing very well. It's becoming very strong. General Kelly has done a great job. General Kelly.
He's done next to nothing. Did I miss something, Angry?
My administration is also following through on our promise to secure, protect, and defend that border within our United States. Our southern border will be protected always. It will have the wall. Drugs will stop pouring in and poisoning our youth. And that will happen very, very
I had
soon.
No idea that
You're
Cardinal Health was located in Mexico. On. Did you, Angry?
The drugs are pouring into our country, folks. They are poisoning our youth and plenty of others. And we're going to stop it. We're not going to be playing games. Not going to be playing games. Following my executive action, and don't forget, we've only been here for like...
Can't count.
50 days? We've already experienced an unprecedented 40% reduction in illegal immigration on our southern border. 61% since Inauguration Day. 61%. Think of that.
What?
And now people are saying,
I have no idea.
We're not going to go there anymore because we can't get in. So it's going to get better and better. We got to stop those drugs, though. We got to stop those drugs. During the campaign,
wonder how many Trumpansies are oxied out of their minds right now.
I met with many American families whose loved ones were viciously and violently killed by illegal immigrants because our government refused to enforce our already existing laws. These American victims were ignored by the media. They were ignored by Washington. But they were not ignored by me, and they're not ignored by you, and they never will be ignored, certainly any longer. Not going to happen. As we speak, we are finding the drug dealers, the robbers, thieves, gang members, killers, and criminals preying on our citizens. One by one, you're reading about it, right?
Yeah, people with parking tickets.
They're being thrown out of our country. They're being thrown into prisons, and we will not let them back in.
Wow, they're being thrown into prisons without so much as a trial. Fuck a bunch of due process, right, Angry?
We're also working night and day to
I think
keep
this sounded a lot better in the original German.
Safe from terrorism.
Woo, because a Muslim going to come for your Bible right down there in Tennessee.
From 9/11 to Boston to San Bernardino, hundreds upon hundreds of people from outside our country have been convicted of terrorism-related offenses.
Cousin Mama, Cousin Daddy, is America great again yet?
Did he say hundreds?
All over hundreds of refugees are under federal investigation for terrorism and related reasons. We have entire regions of the world destabilized by terrorism and ISIS. For this reason, I issued an executive order to temporarily suspend immigration from places
where here comes
where
the I hate the judge part. We want this.
Occur.
We want to hear this, yeah. Oh, and he does the chin lift and the Mussolini turn.
USA, USA, whatever.
Kid with the crew cuts trying to out-yell everybody in Tennessee.
But let me give you the bad news. We don't like bad news, right? I don't want to. And I'll turn it into good. But let me give you the bad, the sad news. Moments ago, I learned that a district judge in Hawaii...
Yeah, they boo Hawaii in Tennessee.
Part of the much overturned Ninth Circuit Court
that handed you your ass.
And I have to be nice, otherwise I'll get criticized for.
And he does the outstretched arms of Christ on the cross.
About our courts. I'll be criticized by these people, among the most dishonest people in the world. I will be criticized
by the Lugan Pressa.
I'll be criticized by them for speaking harshly about our courts. I would never want to do that. A judge has just blocked our executive order on travel and refugees coming into our country from certain countries. The order he blocked was a watered-down version of the first order that was also blocked by another judge and should have never been blocked to start with.
Except for the fact that it was unconstitutional as fuck.
This new order was tailored to the dictates of the Ninth Circuit's, in my opinion, flawed ruling. This is, in the opinion of many, an unprecedented judicial overreach.
Ooh, big words.
The law and the Constitution give the president the power to suspend immigration when he deems, or she. Fortunately, it will not be Hillary she.
He's still talking about Hillary.
And the Sparkle Ponies go, hell yeah! Ooh, Hillary Brugge Brugge! By the way, folks are loving this. I got a note from Jen in Wisconsin. She said, perfect. I think you should do some more over-talking of him talking with angry. It's an extra bonus. It's like MST 3000 for politics. Ah, he sounds so frightening. Now he's doing the
when
cute little Hitlerian hand gestures.
It to be in the national interest of our country.
They're still saying lock her up after Flynn?
Yeah.
Lock
her up.
This is all right, right?
This is live, man.
And the
white fraternity
here.
Boys is just
a
laughing.
Here. Let me read to you directly from the federal statute. 212F of the immigration, and you know what I'm talking about, right? Can I read this to you? Listen to this. Now, we're all smart people. We're all good students. We're all everything. Some are bad students, but even if you're a bad student, this is a real easy one, let me tell you. Ready? So here's the statute, which they don't even want to quote when they overrule it. And it was put here for the security of our country. And this goes beyond me because there'll be other presidents. And we need this. And sometimes we.
You know what's
need
particularly interesting in the district court decision
says,
in Hawaii?
Now listen to easy, how easy this is.
Judge Barton
the president finds
specifically cited the quotes by Donald Trump himself on the campaign trail to show that, in fact, it is not a neutral ban, that it is, in fact, a Muslim ban. He turned it sideways, and he shoved it right up Donald Trump's orange ass.
You know, today they'd say that.
And they're not happy. And they won't be
happy
because
that's the only
this is what he hired Bannon and Miller and the rest of these cats to do, was to find a legal way to slip this in. And, you know, it didn't work the first time, so they tried again, and it got stopped this time. They're going to find another way.
Immigrants or non-immigrants.
Yeah.
Or impose.
Well, and even if they don't succeed, it'll keep the roofs ginned up.
He may deem
mm-hmm.
to be
and see, he's reading the statute right now,
he
but he's not going
there,
to explain the
she,
complexities of constitutional law
say,
to the schmucks
sorry, folks,
to the extent
now,
that
please,
any action of the
no
president
problems.
Has to be in accord with the Constitution, which his Muslim ban ain't.
We're talking about
but they know
the
that.
Safety of
so,
our nation.
No, they don't know that. They don't know
safety
shit about the Constitution,
and
angry.
Of our people.
They don't know they don't know the Constitution. From the Monday morning NASCAR wrap up.
Yeah, but that's a mistake that I think we're making, especially on what is supposed to be the left and what's left of the left in North America. Because, you know, Bush, we kept talking about how stupid he was. And, yeah, he made stupid decisions and he didn't, you know, he was a dry drunk. You know, we can make all of these comments about him. But when he said that the Constitution is nothing but a piece of paper, that means that he actually knew what it was. Because in order to disregard it like this, you have to actually know that it can't be supportive of what it is that you're doing. So we really need to, you know, I think, you know, put a check on that and realize.
Well, yeah, no. The regime knows that, but the rubes angry don't.
No.
Okay, because they've barely had anything even remotely resembling civics, and all they know is what Fox News or that website that rhymes with light and fart tells them, or what old Aunt Peruni Perline reposts on the Facebook. Remember this, I wasn't. He didn't say, I love the poorly educated for no reason.
For no reason, yeah.
This is a watered-down version of the first one. This is a watered-down version. And let me tell you something. I think we ought to go back to the first one and go all the way, which is what I wanted to do in the first place.
And lose your ass at the Supreme Court.
The danger is clear. The law is clear. The need for my executive order is clear. I was elected to change our broken and dangerous system and thinking in government that has weakened and endangered our country and left our people defenseless.
Defenseless? I mean, here I am. Little old studio in West
and
Virginia,
I will not stop fighting
and
for
the ISIS
safety
could
of
come
you
right
and
in and just
lop off
all our hades.
Not ever. We're gonna win it.
Defenseless can't be any less Hitlerian than anything we've ever heard. Pat Buchanan didn't sound like that.
No, and in point of fact, that's gotta just play great with, say, the Pentagon. That has a budget that exceeds 10 times the next six or seven countries combined, which include Russia and China.
Yeah, but China's actually reduced their budget, according to James Defense Week.
Right, but we're defenseless. We're defenseless, angry. We're defenseless. And again, the stop, the turn, the profile, the Mussolini chin thing.
But these are the problems we have. People are screaming, break up the Ninth Circuit. I'll tell you what. That Ninth Circuit, you have to see. Take a look at how many times they have been overturned with their terrible decisions. Take a look.
Terrible.
And this is what we have to live with.
Horrible.
Finally, I want to get to taxes. I want to cut the hell out of taxes. But
not for you, Rubes.
Before I
right.
can do that.
Don't smarten up a chump.
First, I'll be honest. There is one more very important thing that we have to do.
Yeah?
We are going to repeal and replace horrible, disastrous Obamacare.
We're going to kill 16,000, 17,000 people in the first
if
year alone.
Obamacare in place. Millions and millions of people will be forced off their plans. And your senators just told me that in your state, you're down to practically
Is
no insurers.
Really saying this?
You can have nobody. You can have nobody. And this is true all over. The insurers are fleeing. The insurers are fleeing. It's a catastrophic situation. And there's nothing to compare anything to because Obamacare won't be around for a year or two. It's gone. So it's not like, oh, gee, they have this. Obamacare is gone. Premiums will continue to soar, double digits and even triple digits in many cases. It will drain our budget and destroy our jobs. Remember all of the broken promises? You can keep your doctor. You can keep your plan. Remember the wise guy? Remember the wise guy that essentially said the American people, the so-called architect, the American people are stupid because they approved it? We're going to show them. Those in Congress who made these promises have no credibility whatsoever on health.
No.
And did remember
he really
this.
Say what he just said?
Yeah, he did. And let's remember, somebody on Obamacare right now might be paying $1,600 a month for coverage under the Affordable Care Act.
I remember years ago I'd go to Washington.
Under TriNCare, it goes up to $17,600, and that's a 64-year-old person making $25,000 a year.
Brother Bob, it sounds like I'm listening to a broken record because, you know, I'm here he is.
It's a campaign speech from a year ago.
Well, he just finished mentioning Hillary not too long ago, and they were chanting, lock her up. I mean, he hasn't gotten over the fact that he actually won the goddamn thing. He's still not satisfied, which means that he probably, in his heart of fucking hearts, doesn't believe that he deserves this.
He knows he doesn't.
Joy Behar went on The View this morning, supposedly, and said that she believes that Melania Trump is being held hostage.
Well, yeah, I see a lot of that, but I got no sympathy for her. I've said that time after time. But there's one thing to take into account here, and I think it's worthwhile to mention. It seems kind of weird that he's running around the country holding these Nuremberg rallies.
Which is exactly what the fuck they are. That's exactly what it is. You called that.
But
fuck,
what would have happened? Because we didn't see a lot of this. In the modern media world, Angry, what would have happened if Barack Obama had done a few more of these things? Now, I'm not picking on President Obama, but what if he had gone out and stirred up the masses?
Well, what if he had put on those comfortable slippers, those shoes that he was talking about? When did that happen? We waited for it. Those of us in the lumpen proletariat, we were waiting for it. We never saw it. We kept hearing about the promises. He kept promising natives. He kept promising every goddamn buddy. He promised everybody. Wall Street got theirs. The military-industrial complex, for the most part, got what they asked for. Israel certainly got what the fuck it asked for. BP, they fuck up the Gulf of Mexico, screw up all this shit, kill people. Louisiana had another one. Nothing. It did for them. He's a nutcase. This man is a nutcase. Well, see, the thing about it is, you're pointing out that the people who are at the rally, who are jumping up and down right now, are about to lose their fucking health care. Bloomberg, not a communist fucking site. The New York Times, the Congressional Budget Office. Nothing seems to, you know, get through the thickness of their fucking skulls, which goes to show that these people really are Neanderthals, right? Nothing seems to get to them that they are going to be paying more. And I just told you about somebody that was reported on RawStory.com. He admits that he's got 15 employees, and this is going to really damage his ability to stay in business. But he would rather have Trump in, saying that I don't agree with my wife sometimes either. But, you know, with Obama, though, hey, you know, every little thing that he does is bring down the Western civilization, as Steve King was just talking about. Everything he does is anti-white. It's pushing a Muslim Sharia agenda, blah, 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 blah. This cat, this cut-off grandma, well, hey, fuck it. I'll just have to put up with it. I'm good with that because we really got to get rid of Obamacare because what did he say? It's destroying the country. You know, he's not admitting that these different states that are led by Republicans refused to fucking contribute to these exchanges like they were supposed to and caused this chaos in the first goddamn.
And he's not talking about the bill that was initiated by people like Marco Rubio in the Senate that gutted the Affordable Care Act's ability to to keep track with cost increases. There's that too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same thing they're doing with the GPOs around the country. They're trying to get rid of the general post office. I mean, you know, one of the few goddamn things in the country that works. The mail system in this country is the best in the world. I'm saying that because that's the fucking truth.
But they want to privatize all of this, and they defund the post office every fucking fiscal year, you know, on the hopes that it will implode. And that way you'll be forced to fucking deal with whatever company pops up to fucking deal with your mail. And when they stop delivering, and, you know, the trucks and shit, you know, gas goes up for whatever the fuck, petrol goes up 5 cents, you know, they put that on you, and it's going to cost you five times what it did to mail that goddamn postcard to grandma to say, hey, you know, I hope you feel better, because I know you're they cut you off. And I know you're probably having a hard time breathing and shit with your nebulizer. So, you know, I just hope you're well. And I couldn't send you a real letter, and I couldn't call you because I couldn't afford it. So, you know, just the cheapest thing I could do was send you this goddamn postcard. Yeah, you know, this is the future that they want. This is the future that they're fighting for. I mean, I don't know what Republican, I can't remember his name, but he said, hey, regular Americans don't care about health care. They don't care about Trump's taxes. Nobody's really interested in this. Yeah.
Well, as Larry just noted to me, if this was in German, I could easily believe I was tuned into the History Channel. God, the kid, the 16-year-old kid in the crew cut, he's on the verge of like some sort of religious ecstasy.
No matter our geography, we all share the same home, we all salute the same flag, and we all are made by the same God.
What?
That was the Nazi.
Oh, man, the kid with the crew cuts giving the thumbs up, pointing at him, raising his hand up to Jesus. Oh, yeah, he's losing it.
Belief in God. That was the Nazi religion. Belief in God.
Somewhere between 20 and 30% of the people of the United States have no religion whatsoever. They just got erased.
Yeah, so you know that means atheists are the most hated population in the United States behind transgender
women. It's time to embrace our glorious American destiny.
Holy
Anything
shit.
We can dream for our country, we can achieve for our country. All we have to do is tap into that American pride that is swelling our hearts and stirring our souls. And
I think it's swelling something else for the kid with the crew cut.
Very recently in our last election. A lot of pride.
A lot of pride. A lot of pride.
We are all Americans, and the future truly belongs to us.
Oh!
It belongs to all of you. This is your moment. This is your time. This is the hour when history is made. All we have to do is put our own citizens first. And together, we will make America strong again. We will make America wealthy again. We will make America proud again. We will make America safe again. And we will make America great again. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you. God bless you, everybody.
Rubes. Okay, with that, we have to have a musical interlude. I'm sorry, we just do. Stand by, Angry.
Okay. To Africa. To Africa.
Stag in the forest runs free, but gather together to greet the storm. Tomorrow belongs to me. The branch of the linden is leafy and green. The Rhine gives its gold to the sea. But somewhere a glory awaits unseen. Tomorrow belongs to me. The babe in his cradle is closing his eyes.
Are we all standing up? Yeah, toward the end there, that's where the stiff arm salute comes out.
Well, in that film, because it's been a while since I've seen it, but, you know, when they first come into the cafe passing out that crap, they kick them out, you know, because Berlin at that time had one of the most active gay communities in Western Europe. They had newspapers, they had, you know, political stuff going on. And Hirschfeld, Dr. Hirschfeld, Magnus Hirschfeld, was running around, who coined the term homosexuality in the 1920s. And they took that list, they took all of those people who were known in the gay community there in Berlin and sent them all to the camps. You know, well, right after they got rid of Ernst Röhm, who was part of that community, and most of the other young men that he had hired for the brown shirts that he was fucking around with in the bathhouses. And after they got rid of them and the Nine Long Knives, then they got rid of the rest of the gay population, put them in the camps.
Exactly.
And their struggle wasn't even recognized. Yeah, I mean, their struggle wasn't even recognized. Paragraph, really can't remember the number of it, but the law against homosexuality in Germany, a lot of people don't realize that after the Allies, because the Russians didn't do this, but after the Western Allies had liberated a lot of these camps, all of the homosexuals that were still being held, they were still held in German prisons. They carried out the rest of their terms. They released all the Jews, all the Rom people, the few blacks that were there, right? All of these soldiers that were there, POWs. But they took the homosexuals and put them back in prisons, put them back in civilian prisons in Western Germany. And no one talked about this until around 2008, where they were legally recognized by the German government in terms of what happened to them. So, what we just heard is going in that direction. And we've been hearing this. We've been hearing this since Reagan. But this motherfucker's really going to do it. Tomorrow.
Yeah, I want to be clear, because I just got a note from Alma. And Alma said, this man is maniacal. He is regurgitating Bannon. He knows he's losing ground and sounds desperate. It is hard to believe there is such toxicity being swallowed by a minority in this country. On Wednesday church night, it's all about hypocrisy, which makes people's heads spin. I want to make something abundantly clear. He was in Tenistan, okay? Tenistan that repeatedly elects Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander. Tenistan that sends Diane Black and Marsha Gedness Blackburn to the House of Representatives. What have I talked about in saying, and, you know, Marsha Blackburn's a good case in point, so is Diane Black. If somebody is an asshole in the Congress, it is a law of nature that they were sent there by a whole bunch of other assholes. Mm-hmm. So one thing here, and I'm not correcting or remonstrating, but I want to be clear about something. In a place like Tenistan, where, remember, their legislature is considering imposing bastardy on the children of gay couples, okay? In Tenistan, the Trumpanzees are, in fact, not a minority. They are the vast majority. Just like here in West by God Trump, Virginia. They are a dangerous majority. They are a majority on the march. And they are a majority that doesn't give a tinker's damn who gets hurt as long as he will tell them that we've made America great again. See, with diatribes like that against the federal judge, what he's hoping to do is get one of those gunned up, mouth breathing, knuckle walking freaks to go and squeeze off a round or two. This on the same day that he pissed and moaned
about a joke video in which he confessed to being a clown. And let me throw one more thing out there. at least we get a little humor out of it. Steve in China says, post office? You won't need to send Grandma a postcard. Just talk to her on the secret microwave TV. Yeah. But
hold on for 1 second before you go any further. I just saw this. This is breaking. After the president lays out his agenda, Newt Gingrich, Larry Elder, and Sheriff David Clark will react on a special live Hannity.
Oh, Jesus! To the judge's decision? Yeah, I'm sure. The outrage will be cranked. The outrage will be cranked up to 11. Well, we're almost out of time, Angry. And before I go, let me note that Asa was the one and only this evening. Asa got us started in fundraising, and it started there, and it ended there. So we've got $160 to raise to stay even with this evening. Otherwise, tomorrow night's fundraising goal is $360 or whatever it comes down to, thanks to our merry little band of subscribers. So hopefully that will get better. I'm going broke on propane right now.
Well, you're going broke because you actually have radio like this, where we just did this commentary, you know, while this man spoke. You would never see anybody that would challenge any of this in the mainstream media for a good reason. You know, I mean, look, if Malloy, you, Brad Blog,
Rick Smith,
Randy Rhodes, Rick Smith, you know, me, you know, any of us, we would dominate any goddamn market that they put us into. Not because we're exciting, you know, not because, you know, we have more interesting personalities, what have you, is that we deal with what the hell is actually happening. We're asking questions. You know, Tucker Carlson doesn't ask a goddamn thing. You know, he brings somebody up there. He's trying to help him out. I mean, you got to see the way, at least on Twitter, they're coming after Anderson Cooper simply for asking a question. Why is he being mean? Why is he being mean? Why is that faggot being mean? You know, to say, hey, wait a minute. So what's your basically saying is you're against fake news, but if somebody, a professional newscaster, asks a serious question, then that's a problem too. So, and that's about as mainstream as you can go in terms of, you know, Anderson Cooper. Turns out Shep Smith has a moral center, right, this past couple, after he came out, right? You know, so now he's been the sense or the moral core, especially since Alan Combs has passed away, in terms of what's happening in mainstream or what the hell people are looking at. And like I said, you know, I haven't looked at the Nielsen thing lately, but the last time I looked at it, you know, Fox gets a hell of a lot of play. It doesn't deserve it, but it gets a hell of a lot of play. So, you know, who owns them and who owns the Bob Kincaid show? And you have your answer. You know, they would only bring this type of thing to a market if it was making so much money that the politics didn't matter. And that would take like a sea change in terms of the social setup here.
Yeah, at this point in time, I'd just like to have some freaking health care. I mean, I've got a story here about a woman in East Tennessee who was cut off of hers and turned around and she had a horrible, horrible seizure disorder that was perfectly manageable with a handful of medications. Well, she got cut off, and she died. Mm-hmm. And so she gets to be one of those early people. She's one out of the thousands of people that Donald Trump wants to murder in cold blood by taking away health insurance.
Well, you saw Paul Ryan.
And there's just not a hell of a lot of anything more evil than that. And yes, that same issue preys upon me. I've got a doctor's appointment Monday to find out whether or not I badly, urgently, and sort of immediately need a surgery that at this point in time I can't have. And by immediately and urgently, I mean to save my life.
and I can't have it right now. And that weighs, and this isn't poor, poor, pitiful me. There's a hell of a lot of other people in this country facing something similar. But by God, angry, it's real. And what it does to your mind is almost beyond comprehension.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I wish you and Agnes, you know, Ms. Angry and I miss you and Agnes the best in that. But yeah, it's bullshit that you even have to think about that. And then, you know, when we start talking, what you and I talk about here, when Bernie Sanders, if people had gotten up off their ass and really started, you know, really making the fucking arguments and demanding rule of fucking law, and if the media did what the fuck they were supposed to do instead of trying to play catch up at this point, because they've been insulted and they're taking it personally, this is, you wouldn't need to worry about this. Your biggest concern would just be keeping the show on the air rather than worrying about whether or not you can get the treatment that you need in a country that, you know, the idea of having, you know, socialized or industrialized or whatever the fuck you want to call it, medicine, you know, sponsored medicine with our goddamn tax money. Every other fucking industrialized country in the world has this. So, you know, people, brothers and sisters, please, you know, I mean, a lot of new listeners, you know, come in here. Hey, if you give a damn about this type of radio, please do what you can to keep this show on the air. You know, any program that you add that you support, but you hear what Bob just said. So, you know, please do what you can. Dig deep, please. Peace.
Thanks, Angry. You have a good evening. And we are out of here. And I'm going to go and jump under the covers. Got to get warm one way or another. We got it. We raised the temperature back here all the way up to 57 degrees. Just one more night of this shit. So, thank whomever. Thank Flying Spaghetti Monster. Yep, exactly. So, thank you one and all. Back for Thorn in the Side Thursday tomorrow. And hey, the fundraising goal is now down to only $35. So thank you, Charlene, and thank you, Frank. And, of course, thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Thanks very kindly to our utility-designated chat room moderator, Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.